Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On July 2nd, the retail giant Walmart celebrated its 50th anniversary. Sam Walton opened the first Walmart store in Rogers, Arkansas on July 2nd, 1962. 50 years later, with 2 million employees and more than 10,000 stores around the globe, Walmart is now the second largest corporation in the world. It's opened 1,100 new supercenters since 2005. But over the years, Walmart has faced growing criticism and protests over poor working conditions, low wages, alleged sex discrimination, and the closure of independent stores across the country. A 2007 study by the UC Berkeley Labor Center revealed that when a state has 50 Walmart stores, the average wages for retail workers were 10% lower, and their job-based health coverage rate was 5% less than they would have been without Walmart's presence. Sam Walton's heirs own about half of Walmart's stock and have a net worth equal to the combined assets of the bottom one-third of Americans. That's about 100 million people. This year alone, the Waltons will make $2.7 billion in dividends from their Walmart holdings. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by taking a look at Walmart, its history, and its economic and political influence. Stacy Mitchell says Walmart's explosive growth has gutted two key pillars of the American middle class, small businesses and well-paying manufacturing jobs. Stacy Mitchell is a senior researcher with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, where she directs initiatives on community banking and independent retail. She's author of Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. Hi, Stacy. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. So nice to be with you.
Great to have you. Walmart has also been trying to dominate the global retail market, and one place that it has been growing the fastest is Mexico. Walmart is the largest company of any kind in Mexico. Charles Fishman is an award-winning investigative reporter and author of The Walmart Effect, How the World's Most Powerful Company Really Works and How It's Transforming the American Economy. And Charles joins us from Mexico City. Hi, Charles. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. So, where to start? There's so much to talk about. First of all, Charles, is it true that in Mexico, per person, there are 50% more Walmarts than there are in the U.S.?
Yes, Walmart. For people who think that Walmart dominates the U.S. landscape, they should come to Mexico. Walmart accounts for about 8 to 9% of total retail spending in the U.S. I think it's close to double that in Mexico. And the presence of Walmart in Mexico is even more dominant because a lot of retail in Mexico is sort of informal. People buy food from corner stands. I moved down here because my wife has a big journalism job here in Mexico City, so I'm sort of the trailing spouse. And we came last Halloween. We live right in the heart of Mexico City. We are 103 steps from the nearest Walmart. But between us and that Walmart, which is literally just a half a block away, there are typically three vegetable stands and food stands that are always, you know, that are always open, you know, from whatever 7:30 in the morning to 9 o'clock at night. So while we're walking to Walmart, we buy our avocados and our mangoes and stuff like that at the fruit stands as opposed to buying them at the Walmart. So, but Walmart is hugely dominant in Mexico. It's sort of astonishing. This one's 100 steps from us. There's a second Walmart literally three blocks in the opposite direction.
Wow. Is it popular in Mexico? Or do people actually shop there?
Well, sure. I mean, if they account for 20 or 30% of retail spending in Mexico, they're popular. I mean, the only problem with criticizing Walmart for being the evil beast is that Walmart is a strictly voluntary transaction. Whether it's the U.S. or Mexico, the only reason there are 50% more Walmarts per 100,000 people in Mexico is that people want to shop here. You know, if it were not useful to people, they wouldn't shop there, and it would go out of business. And so there are many ways of criticizing Walmart, and I think many of them are important and valid, but it is also true that the only power Walmart has is the power to provide something consumers want. If you don't like Walmart, the most powerful action you can take is to close your wallet and walk on by.
Well, and in many parts of the country, it's really the only option.
Well, of course, it isn't the only option, because before Walmart moved in here 10 years ago, Mexicans ate and they had clothes. They watched TV. What's interesting, there was this huge controversy about Walmart going into a community that had some big pyramids, and it's not clear that Walmart built in a completely sensitive way on the edge of a historic area. But when that controversy was happening about 5 years ago, I really enjoyed reading the coverage. One of the women who was quoted, one of the Mexicans who was quoted, said, "You know, you're an American reporter. I ride an hour on the bus to get to a store that will give me what Walmart will give me. Then I ride an hour home. That's 2 hours, and I haven't done any shopping yet." When was the last time you, American reporter, rode 2 hours to do your shopping? I'm happy Walmart's coming. They bring me what I want. So I thought that was a very bracing perspective, which is that here in Mexico, as in the U.S., in many communities, Walmart provides a single place to buy blue jeans and school clothes and school supplies and fruit and food in a much more convenient setting than people with modest means and very limited time would otherwise get. And I think that is one of the reasons it's popular. Mexico is a place, there are places in Europe, Italy is a place like this as well, where people still buy their bread one place and their fruit one place and their meat one place. But as the society gets busier and more sophisticated, it's very nice to be able to go one place and do all your errands and then go back to doing what else you need to do. And for good and for ill, Walmart does provide that opportunity. We can talk a little later in the show. One of the reasons Walmart is so dominant, apparently, is that it bribed half the elected officials in
Mexico.
Right. So.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. Stacey Mitchell, how do you see it? What do you think of Charles' assessment?
Well, clearly Walmart has risen to dominance in part because of consumer choices, but I think that assessment really misses the degree to which Walmart has relied on and extracted a lot of government favors that it hasn't gotten, that haven't gone to competing independent retailers. You know, in the U.S., Walmart has picked up billions of dollars in local and state development subsidies, you know, to build stores. It gets tax breaks in a lot of states that are not available to small businesses. And, of course, in Mexico, you know, as we know, you know, as Charles mentioned, the New York Times expose recently, Walmart bribed a lot of local governments in Mexico to get permits and to speed along its expansion in ways that competing retailers couldn't do. So its rise to dominance isn't strictly the result of market forces and consumer choices. And I think the other thing that I think that assessment really misses that's so critical right now is that Walmart isn't done growing. And so we can look out there and say, okay, well, some people like Walmart and like to have that. But I think the real question on the table right now is, should this retailer continue to gain an even larger share of the U.S. and the Mexican economy, for that matter? Do we want a company that now has about 10% of U.S. retail sales, which is staggering and unprecedented in history, and also has 25% of the U.S. food system? U.S. grocery sales are now Walmart. They've got plans. They want to open dozens and dozens of stores, particularly in urban areas, but also more stores across the country. So the question, I think, really going forward is that going to be a good move for the U.S. economy? You know, we can debate about sort of the existing Walmarts a long time without getting, I think, to that really important question. And are we going to continue to have public policies that really favor Walmart's expansion and, you know, leave us with fewer and fewer choices and fewer competing retailers?
Can you tell us a little bit more about those policies?
Yeah, you know, so subsidies, development subsidies are a big one that Walmart has benefited from. So this is when, you know, Walmart comes into a community and says, hey, we want to build this big store and it's going to be great for your local economy, you know, never mind if that's actually true. And Walmart says to local officials, but, you know, in order to do that, we want to get, you know, a $7 million property tax break. So, you know, in many cases, cities have approved those kinds of deals. Walmart has gotten that public subsidy. Meanwhile, the competing grocers and independent businesses in that town are not getting a property tax break. There are all kinds of ways those types of subsidies happen, but they've been happening all over the country. Several billion dollars. We don't know exactly how much because they're difficult to track, but there's a research firm in Washington, D.C. called Good Jobs First that has compiled a lot of these kinds of development subsidies and really shown the magnitude of how much Walmart has received. There are also about half the states have big loopholes in their corporate income tax structures that basically allow Walmart to transfer profits made in those states to subsidiaries in other states and basically get out of paying state income taxes. So they lower their corporate income tax bill by doing this kind of accounting maneuver, this sort of sleight of hand. If you're a local business and you only have operations in that state, there's no way for you to take advantage of that accounting maneuver, even if you knew how to do it and had the resources to do it. There's that. There are the kinds of zoning laws, you know, that a lot of communities have put in place that have really facilitated and paved the way, as it were, for Walmart development and undermine the kinds of business districts where independent retailers thrive. And, you know, we could also talk about the degree to which Walmart employees rely on food stamps and other forms of public assistance as a form of subsidy that really helps keep this company afloat. So this is, you know, to reduce this simply to a matter of consumer choices, I think misses a lot of the public policy that has played a role in Walmart's rise.
Hey, what about that, Charles? What about the policies involved in,
well,
in Walmart's growth?
All the things Stacey ticks off are really important, and Walmart has, you know, Walmart has 4,000 stores across just across the U.S. And so they have, over the years, gotten very good at saying, boy, we sure would like to build this brand-new store with 400 jobs in your community, but you're going to have to make it worth our while for us to make it worth your while. And I think it's important to understand that those rules aren't in place just for Walmart. All kinds of companies take advantage of that. And so if you look at, you know, vehicle assembly plants in South Carolina and Alabama, they're there in part because of the incentives that were put in place to bring them. Now, I think one point that Good Jobs First and that Stacey Mitchell bring up that's really important is an auto assembly plant with $20 and $25 an hour jobs and a real career ladder does represent economic development. If you build a BMW plant in Alabama, then you get 100 supplier companies around it as well. And in our current state of the economy in this country in the last 20 years, I think city councilmen and county commission members, planning directors have sort of gotten a little too excited at the arrival of a Walmart or a Walmart Supercenter or a Target. Retail is not economic development. You can't create an economy just on retail. And so one of the great things that Good Jobs First does, and that I think the kind of journalism that I did when I was at newspapers and that many newspapers, the ones that still exist, still do, is to ask the question, just exactly what Stacey said, well, why should Walmart get economic incentives in a community and then come in and out, you know, why do they get a property tax abatement? What about all the people who are already doing business in that community? But it is also true that it is the job of the people who live in that community, both the citizens, but much more important, the elected officials, to say, hang on. We've got grocery stores here. They're not getting any property tax abatement. If you want to come, you're going to have to play by the same rules. And Walmart has become unfortunately skilled at sort of pitting communities against each other and, to some degree, fuzzing up the economic benefit of Walmart. And the good news is that now there's no secrets, there's no mysteries. If you want to understand what's going to happen when a Walmart comes to your community, or in some ways more important, when the fourth Walmart comes to your community, all you have to do is sit down and start doing the research, asking questions. Much of this material is available for free on the Internet, but the economic impact of the arrival of a big Walmart is very, very clear, and so the economic impact should be balanced against whatever benefits, you know, I'm not sure Walmart should be getting any benefits that Publix or Safeway or Vons or any other company doesn't get, and it may be that we've become a little too cavalier about handing those out because we like to see shiny new buildings.
Well, and also, Stacy, Target is also celebrating its 50th birthday today, mm-hmm. but according to reports, Walmart makes what Target makes in a year by March. I mean, they blow them away. So yeah. how has Walmart been able to become so massive?
Yeah, they really, and what's interesting that Walmart, Kmart, and Target all started in the same year in different parts of the country. Walmart has really left everybody else in the dust. They're many times the size of other retailers. I mean, Target is still a huge company, and they play much the same kind of game, and I think have locally anyway some very similar kinds of impacts. But Walmart has gotten to be a lot bigger. Part of it, I think, you know, it's they started out in rural areas in the southern Midwest, and they grew at this very dense way, where they would sort of take over and sort of blanket an entire region, and then they would move a little further out and blanket the next region. So it was a long time before they reached the East Coast and the Northeast and the West Coast, but by the time they did, Walmart was already just a giant company because it had become such a dominant retail player in the Midwest and in the South, and so they came in with a lot of muscle. And when they began to expand. Now, of course, the big, frontier for all of these big chains, Walmart and Target and Home Depot and all the other ones, are cities. You know, cities are one of the few places where independent businesses, at least in many cities, still continue to thrive, where you have a very diverse retail economy with lots of different players, lots of different choices, very different from what we see in the suburbs. But the chains are now making that push and hoping to, Walmart is certainly hoping to follow that same kind of expansion approach that it did in the Midwest, in the sense that, when it's opening stores in Chicago, it's not talking about opening, one or two sort of flagship stores like Macy's in New York. I mean, it's talking about opening dozens and dozens of stores so that they become, the dominant retailer in every single neighborhood in the city. And that's ultimately what their goal is. And I think that's something we should really be quite concerned about, and something that cities should be looking to take some steps to prevent.
And that is Stacy Mitchell, senior researcher with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. She is author of Big Box Swindle. We're also joined by Charles Fishman, investigative reporter and author of The Walmart Effect. And today we are talking about Walmart as it marks its 50th year in business, the second largest corporation in the world with 2 million employees and more than 10,000 stores around the globe. If you work at Walmart, shop there, or interact with it in any way, we'd love to hear from you. What effect do you think Walmart is having on retail, the big box industry, our communities, labor, wages? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you live in a community where you have a Walmart, what happened after Walmart came to town? How did it change the community? How did it change your habits? If you go there, if you work there, you can post at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Walmart's average hourly employee working 40 hours a week makes about $24,440 a year. So how does this also affect labor and unions? 866-798-8255. And let's hear from Bill in San Francisco. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
My question is the concern I have with Walmart and basically all the corporation stores is it would seem that it's taking money from an area, but I guess that would also apply to a Safeway, a Target, of course. You go up to a town like Fairfield, and the whole town is just chains, you know, corporate chains. And it would seem that all the people's money is being siphoned off to, you know, the profits, to the where the corporations are headquartered, and I guess to the shareholders. Part of that goes to the shareholders, but it just seems like it's just it would seem like an economy would be a lot stronger if the money stayed local and circulated, and you know, so other businesses could start, and you get basically an ecosystem of businesses.
Right. Well, Stacey, you work specifically on these issues. Can you address that?
Sure. There have been a few studies that have been done. We did one, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and there's a firm, Civic Economics, that has done several in different cities around the country. And they generally find that when if you spend $100 at a national chain, whether it's Walmart or Target, only about $15 stays in the local economy. So about 15 cents on every dollar that you spend there stays local. Most of it goes to pay the wages of the people who work in the store. In contrast, if you spend that money at locally owned businesses, depending on the type of store, somewhere between about 30 and 50 cents of every dollar you spend stays in the local economy. And the big reason for the difference is that local retailers rely on a lot of other goods and services. So, they get their printing done at the local print shop. They need an accountant. They're hiring a local accountant. They need a website made. They're hiring a local web developer. They may stock things in their stores that are produced locally or regionally, at least. So more of that money that you spend, and of course the profits also stay local with the local ownership. So more of that money that you spend at a locally owned retail store stays and circulates in the local economy, whereas with a chain, a lot more of it leaves and sort of heads back to corporate headquarters.
Something like Fairfield, it's almost guaranteed that it's going to stay a poor area, because no matter what they develop, that money.
Sorry, Bill, we just lost you. Do you have anything to add on that one, Charles, before we go to break?
No, I think Stacy's probably more familiar with the details of the statistics. The one thing I would say about Walmart and retail in particular, a place like Walmart, a place like Target, when you spend $10 at Walmart, the profit is 30 cents. So when you spend $10 at ExxonMobil, the profit is $4. When you spend $10 at Apple or $10 at Microsoft, the profit is $4. So Walmart keeps a tiny sliver of the quantity of money that you spend there. As Stacy said, the kinds of things that local businesses have to rely on, locally, much of that is done in a centralized fashion in a huge corporation. I think the thing that I find so disturbing is that you pull off into what used to be a small town in America, and there's six big box chain stores.
Right. Actually, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. It actually looks like a ghost town in many ways other than the Walmart. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. We'll be back after this.
Every Tuesday, the Your Call team sends out their weekly email newsletter. It keeps folks up to speed on what's coming up on the show. Also gives resources to let you learn more and get involved. Subscribe today so you'll know what's coming up and can submit your questions and comments even before a show goes to air. It's free and easy to sign up. Just click the email newsletter link at yourcallradio.org. Of course, you can always participate in today's show by calling 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK, or send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about what is being called Dream Act Lite. We will talk about the new program that allows a limited path to employment for immigrant youth. Is this a step towards immigration reform, or is this just an election year strategy to win more votes? That is tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we'll be talking about Medicare, which, of course, is getting a lot of attention during the presidential race. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email it to us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about Walmart. The first Walmart was opened 50 years ago by Sam Walton. Today, it's the second largest corporation in the world, 2 million employees, more than 10,000 stores around the globe. And speaking of profits, Sam Walton's heirs own about half of Walmart's stock and have a net worth equal to the combined assets of 100 million Americans. This year alone, the Waltons will make almost $3 billion in dividends from their Walmart holdings. So if you live in an area with Walmart, how did things change when Walmart came to town? If you work at Walmart, or if you shop at Walmart, or if you've decided to ban Walmart, why? Talk about your experience. How do you think Walmart has affected the retail market around the world, and how has it affected labor and wages? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also post a comment to yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Charles Fishman, investigative reporter and author of The Walmart Effect, Stacy Mitchell, senior researcher with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and author of Big Box Swindle. And let's hear from Paul in San Diego. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How's everybody?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, you know, I think initially Walmart is a great thing, and you know, you can't help but applaud, you know, applaud these people for just an amazing business that, you know, this mega business that they've created. But I've seen it first in Hawaii, where I used to wonder, why are they standing alone? How are you going to help the local economy by standing alone instead of being a part of a at least a strip mall? To help encourage other small businesses to take part of that, you know, kind of pull everything from there. And after listening to the show, you know, I see why now. Yes, it's good for the consumer. You know, I'm guilty of going there looking for good pricing and, you know, taking a part of it, saving. But I've seen a lot of mom and pops go out. It's like, you know, here we are, America, the land of capitalism, entrepreneurs, and they're literally crushing that spirit.
Mm. Where in Hawaii are you? Or where in Hawaii did you see it?
I was in San Diego, but I was on the Big Island.
On the Big Island.
Yeah, so they put one in Kailua Kona, and I thought it was great at first, and it was, you know, well received almost to a fault.
Well, and especially on, you know, in a place like Hawaii, I mean, now you have access to all these goods that people didn't have access to before.
Right.
Right.
So initially, it was great because the Big Island tends to be very monopolistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hard to get things, so people jack prices up. So it did cause people to get a little bit more realistic with their pricing and the way they did business. But then after that, it kind of just, you know, went wild. And living in San Diego now, it's good, but I don't see how they can help a local community. I mean, 10,000 stores, how many more do you really need?
Hmm. Well, thank you for that. Stacey, how many more is Walmart planning to build? Because I understand that in many parts of the country, they're closing some of their super centers. They're being turned into things like libraries, for example.
Yes, and most of those cases, it's because Walmart has abandoned an existing Walmart store and moved, you know, maybe across the street or a couple of miles down the road to build a bigger super center. And has left that first store empty. So there are a lot of empty Walmarts, but it's not usually, in most cases, it's not because Walmart has left altogether. I mean, that happens once in a while, but most of the time it's because Walmart has just built another store and abandoned its first one, to sit empty or eventually become another use. They have plans, you know, to open, you know, typically between 200 and 300 stores in the U.S. A year and more overseas. Their growth trajectory, I think as you noted at the top of the show, they've opened over 1,000 supercenters in the U.S. since 2005. They're now 35% bigger in the U.S. Than they were in 2005. So you can begin to sort of multiply that out in your mind and imagine where they're going. There are regions of the country, there are 29 metro areas now where Walmart has more than 50% of all grocery sales. So I think this is a, you know, something we really kind of need to wrestle with in terms of the future of our economy. I mean, if we sort of continue down this path, I fear that we will continue shopping ourselves out of decent jobs, that we'll continue to see the middle class shrink, entrepreneurialism fall by the wayside, that a lot of the sort of innovation that has come from small business will disappear. And we will become, you know, an economy that really is increasingly controlled by a very small handful of retailers, with Walmart, you know, at the pinnacle of that. And, you know, it's important to remember that as a retailer, Walmart is not only, you know, the dominant retailer, but because it's the gatekeeper through which products have to pass to reach consumers, it also has an enormous amount of influence over manufacturing and over food production. And so its tentacles extend into all these other sectors of the economy.
Well, speaking of employees and wages, I'd like to introduce our next guest. Pam Davis is a current Walmart employee in Richmond, California, and she's a member of Our Walmart, which is a group of Walmart employees organizing for respect at Walmart. Hi, Pam. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi.
It's great to have you. So, Pam, first off, why don't you talk a little bit about this group, Our Walmart?
Okay. Our Walmart stands for Organization United for Respect at Walmart, meaning that we're a group of employees in various stores, and we're just making our voice heard, and we're standing up to the management.
And what do you do at Walmart?
Right now I'm in stock. I started out as a department manager, and due to the demands, I voluntarily stepped down. I couldn't keep up. I couldn't keep up the pace. They want you to do jobs like of 5 to 6 people, not just the one they hired me for.
Can you tell us more about that? What do you mean? What are they asking you to do?
I was hired to do electronics and photo department managing, and I ended up doing furniture on top of all of that, and home decor, the price changes, the recalls. And this was all yes, I could have delegated, but due to the staffing levels, there was nobody to delegate to. So,
how long have you worked there?
14 months.
And can I ask you what your wage is?
Sure. I started out at $11.15 an hour. Mm-hmm. I stepped down voluntarily to the in-stock overnight crew, and now I'm making $10.45 an hour.
And do you work full-time?
No. I had to take a second job to supplement my income.
So did you ask for full-time work and you didn't get it?
I asked for full-time. I was getting full-time, but I had to take another job that paid more. And I stayed there because of the benefits. The benefits are better one place than the other.
So do you get benefits at Walmart?
Yes.
What do you get?
I have Kaiser Dental and Vision.
Okay.
But it's expensive to have it.
How much do you pay?
I pay like $60 per paycheck, so that's $120 a month.
Okay.
And then when I get to the doctor, I'm still shoveling out more money. Say, for instance, I was supposed to have an MRI. Mm-hmm. They wanted $200 when I got to the visit. I don't make enough to hand out $200.
So you're making $10.45 an hour.
Yes.
And so can you talk a little bit about the working conditions? There's so much controversy over the low wages and then, of course, the massive sex discrimination lawsuit, which was thrown out by the Supreme Court back in June of last year, the largest sex discrimination lawsuit in the country, the history of this country. Can you comment on those?
Not the sex discrimination one, but I can comment on the conditions of our store at the store level. Those I know firsthand.
Okay.
Okay. We hire welfare to work moms, and then we put them, the salary is so low, poverty level, that we put them right back on welfare. So Walmart is actually getting tax credits for that, taking them off the welfare, and then we put them right back on. That makes no sense. So all we want is a livable wage. All we want them to do is listen to us. We've been to home office, and we've had rallies. We just want them to listen to us as a group and to say that we want a livable wage. Livable to us is at least $24,000. Don't increase our hourly wage because you're just going to cut our hours. We know that trick.
Right. So people who ask for full-time, for 40 hours a week, don't get it.
Exactly. Right now, we're going through a remodel. They hired approximately 70 people, full-time, temporary, so they'll keep them on through December, and we have people in the store that have years with the store, and they're only getting 16 hours, 24 hours.
This is Pam Davis we're speaking with. She's a Walmart employee in Richmond. Charles, how common is Pam's story?
Well, I first of all, I want to thank Pam for being willing to both come on the air and to be part of a group that is trying to speak clearly to Walmart, calmly, thoughtfully. You know, that back in the old days, Sam actually used to go to the stores, and I think in the first 10 or 15 years that Walmart existed, the life of people working in the stores was much different. I think her story is completely common. I mean, anybody listening to the show, anybody with their own experience, whether just in California or traveling across the country, when you walk into a Walmart, the staff typically seems harried. You know, they're hustling as hard as they can, and there are reasons. And Pam ticked off sort of a bunch of different things. They don't actually let people get to full-time status, even if they want to. They hire people temporarily. Pam had to take a pay cut because she was unwilling to do four jobs instead of just two. She was unwilling to manage four departments instead of two departments. So, you know, that's where the low prices come from, in part. That's, you know, quote-unquote efficiency, if you can keep your labor costs down. And in this kind of economy, of course, people hang on to whatever $11-an-hour job they can.
Right.
But there's a larger picture, which is that we have promised people that by allowing the manufacturing jobs to go to cheaper places, those jobs will be replaced with something valuable here. And they haven't. And so I think we need to think in slightly larger terms, which is why has the hollowing out of the economy happened, and how come we didn't get the payback of the promise? We do have low prices across the economy, but if you don't make enough to even afford those low prices, then you're in trouble.
Well, and Pam, do you and your colleagues talk about union representation?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And, I mean, we've seen the videos that Walmart has put out on unions.
Okay. Our Walmart is not a union.
Right.
We're just an organization, some employees that have gotten together, and we're former and current, okay? So, and then we've also been retaliated for being part of our Walmart.
What happened?
So they're letting them go. I mean, some that have been in the organization from the beginning. They just letting them, if they're outspoken at the rallies or whatever on the internet, they are now being dismissed. Not, they don't say out, you know, per se, that it's because you're in the our Walmart. It's because you've had too many absences or something like that. Something they could have gotten them for a long time ago, not just because they were outspoken this week.
Do you fear for your job by speaking out?
No. No, we're in an at-will employment state. They're going to do what they have to do.
Stacy, can you talk a little bit about unions and Walmart and the larger issues that this raises?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's you look at what our Walmart has been saying to Walmart, and it's a very reasonable, level-headed set of demands that would be, you know, good for employees and good for the company and good for, you know, the U.S. economy, which is, you know, a living wage. And fair benefits for the communities where Walmart operates, that it treats communities with respect. But Walmart has, you know, as Pam mentioned, has retaliated quite aggressively against this organization, dismissed some of the employees who've been outspoken nationally from this group, and that has been their long-time stance towards any, you know, unions, yes, but even any just efforts of employees to try to have a say in the company that they give their lives to. You know, when there have been places where Walmart stores have been unionized, there was one in Quebec, in Canada, for example, that unionized, and Walmart came in and shut the store down. And you can imagine that kind of what that sends, that message to employees throughout the Walmart system, is that, you know, you're already vulnerable, and if you try to have, if you try to say anything about the conditions on the job, we're going to fire you. And that's just a terrible, you know, that's a terrible place to put people who, as I said, really give their energy and good work to this company and deserve more.
Well, what do you think it'll take for these employees to get something as basic as a living wage so they don't have to take two jobs and be on food stamps?
You know, I think it's really going to take Walmart customers and the communities where Walmart has stores to really stand beside these workers. You know, I mean, I think they, you know, they need all of us to kind of stand up with them. So, you know, I think that's really what it's going to take. You know, I'm really excited, I think, to see how many people have joined our Walmart, how many employees are getting active in this group, and I hope it grows, and I hope there, you know, that more and more, you know, neighbors and community members, you know, also, you know, come out and really speak for what it is that this organization is asking for.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Pam, for joining us. And we'll put a link to our Walmart on our website.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That's Pam Davis. She is a current Walmart employee in Richmond, California. She's a member of the group Our Walmart, which is calling for living wages so they don't have to take two jobs and be on food stamps. We're joined also by Stacy Mitchell, author of Big Box Swindle, and Charles Fishman, author of The Walmart Effect. And we've got about 10 minutes left. So if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Evelyn in San Francisco. Hi, Evelyn. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I am proud that San Francisco does not have a Walmart, and I pride myself in never shopping at a Walmart, but I know that the prices are unbeatable. And I think that our society is very short-sighted and not realizing the high cost of the bargains that we're getting on the backs of people like, I believe her name was Pam, who just spoke. And the quality of merchandise is below par, and we get things that don't last, whereas if we bought something that was made locally by someone, it would give them a wage, it would last longer, and we would have less waste. I am so against the big box mode of business, and I think that we are all very short-sighted when we shop at these bargain places.
Well, Evelyn, did you know that there's a Target is opening in downtown San Francisco in a couple of months?
I know, and I do shop at Target, and I try not to more and more. I think Target is somewhat better than Walmart in how they treat their employees. Maybe I'm deluding myself, but I believe they're a little better. They do a little more for local schools and whatnot. But I also have been an entrepreneur, and I believe in shopping locally. And I just think that we all think, oh, I got this great deal. And we don't think about, and it means that somebody who's working there has to be on welfare in order to make a living and pay for their children's health and food.
Well, thank you for calling. Stacy or Charles, do you know if Target treats its workers better than Walmart?
Well, I think the thing that Target does so well is advertise. The TV advertisements are charming, so people have a warm feeling about Target. In fact, in part because of all the activism around Walmart, there are many areas, I think, where Walmart treats its employees better than Target. Health insurance is one of those. The health insurance at Target is not actually as good or as accessible as the health insurance at Walmart. I think the one thing that Target does do, they staff their stores better. If you go to a Target and go to the checkout line, you are typically... there's either somebody waiting to check you out, or you're the next person in line. Somebody's being taken, but you're second. And that you have to actually staff to do that. At Walmart, there are typically four or five people in every single checkout line. And what that means is they're outsourcing the cost of taking your money to you at Walmart, your time, but also the people who are doing that job, that checkout job at Walmart, it is absolutely unrelenting, and their customers are typically cranky by the time they get to them. So I do think that anybody who thinks that Target is a substantively different kind of company and that it's okay to shop there, but they vehemently oppose Walmart, is absolutely dreaming. Target would not be a successful competitor of Walmart in exactly the same space. 80% of the products are identical if they weren't doing basically the same things.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Evelyn. And we've got time for one more call. Let's hear from Guadalupe Palma. She is with the Warehouse Workers United in Southern California. Hi, Guadalupe. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. So can you talk a little bit about what you do and how you're organizing?
Sure. Warehouse Workers United is an organization based in the Inland Empire, which is about like 50 miles east of Los Angeles, and that's the counties of Riverside and San Bernardino. And that the Inland Empire is the location for the biggest, the largest warehouse and distribution hub in the United States. This area is full of warehouses for the largest retailers. There are approximately 85,000 warehouse workers just in that area. And they move merchandise for the largest retailers, including Target, including Walmart. And our effort is to organize the warehouse workers in this area and change the working conditions there in these warehouses.
And how have you seen any improvements? Are you also making around 20, 24,000 a year?
I'm not a warehouse worker.
Are the warehouse workers making that?
No, I mean, the warehouse workers, some of the issues in the industry are, it's rampant with health and safety problems. A lot of workers are injured on the job. They unload containers that come in through the ports of L.A. and Long Beach, and then sort the merchandise and the boxes, and then reload them onto, a lot of times, Walmart containers that reach the stores. So that the workers suffer a lot of different health and safety abuses, such as lack of drinking water, many injuries. Last night, a worker was hit by a forklift because of the pace that the workers have to work at, very quick paces.
What do you mean, lack of drinking water?
The workers have taken pictures, actually, of some of the water receptacles, and it shows it's dark water, it's brown.
What?
And the workers aren't given enough time to really take a good break. Right now in the Inland Empire, it's well over 100 degrees every day. Inside of these steel containers that they have to unload, it could be up to 120, 130 degrees. Mm. And the workers have to work at a very fast pace and have to unload these containers and then reload them. So those are some of the abuses that take place as far as health and safety. There are also a lot of wage and hour abuses, a lot of stolen wages. Many times workers aren't even making $8 an hour, and they're not given enough time to take breaks or take lunches.
In Guadalupe, do people talk about unions, or is that a dirty word? I mean, where does that fit in here?
So Warehouse Workers United is an organization dedicated to improve the lives and the jobs of warehouse workers in the area. There is a lot of retaliation when workers speak out against these conditions. I mean, right now workers are organizing simply for these employers to follow basic labor laws, basic
wow.
wage and hour and health and safety protections.
And to have clean, healthy water.
Yes.
Well, Guadalupe, we're almost out of time, but thank you so much for calling in. And Stacey, what's your response to this? And what will it take to change this?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that this is we're beginning. We're seeing more and more, you know, what the real hidden cost here is of this big box retail model. And I think it's going to take a lot of different things to change this, I think.
I mean, and it's not just, sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. It's not just Walmart. I mean, we're getting phone calls or emails also about Amazon and the problems they're having with their warehouses.
Yes. Well, you should do a show on Amazon.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's very true. Their warehouses and a lot of their other practices are just as predatory as Walmart and Target. It's partly a public policy matter. I mean, I think we really need to look at government and what it is that we're supporting, what kind of economy that we're creating. But it's also about, you know, standing up to these companies and workers having rights on the jobs and having protections. And it's about, you know, thinking differently about how we spend our money and choosing businesses that are, you know, part of our community and that represent our values as a society.
And final thoughts, we didn't even have time to talk about Walmart's green initiatives, but you just came out with a report on that, and then Michelle Obama embracing the healthy food campaign on the stage with Walmart executives last year.
Well, it's astounding. I mean, it's you know, here you have a company that has played a major role in the demise of neighborhood grocery stores that is now coming in and saying, oh, we're going to be a solution to food deserts, to neighborhoods that lack fresh food. We know that from lots of research that's been done, that the problem of poor diet and bad food choices is really a problem of poverty. And everywhere that Walmart goes, poverty increases. I mean, this has been documented by a number of studies that have shown the more Walmarts you have in a community, the higher the rate of poverty. And so that's really what we need to be focusing on, is how do we create the kinds of jobs that people can work full-time and earn a decent living. That's really the solution, I think, to the problems of food deserts. And the idea that Walmart is the solution, you know, a company that has already controls 25% of the U.S. food system and has had a terrible impact in terms of the dollars that go to farmers, consolidation and production. I mean, this is a company that has really led to more industrialization of our food system than any other. And so I really don't think that Walmart is the solution.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Stacy Mitchell is author of Big Box Swindle, and Charles Fishman is author of The Walmart Effect. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. How will the Deferred Action Program affect the lives of undocumented youth in the U.S.? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about the new program that allows a limited path to employment for immigrant youth. It's being called the DREAM Act Lite. Is this a step towards more comprehensive immigration reform, or is it just an election year strategy to win votes? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What is the ongoing reality of undocumented youth in the U.S. today? It's Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us